Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It is Friday, July 10th, 2020. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news on books and publishing. And once again, Andrew Albanese, PW senior writer, joins me from his home office in New York City. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So whatever else one has to say about Donald J. Trump, and listeners know you have had a lot to say over the years, Andrew, the president is nothing if not litigious, a trait he has carried with him from Trump Tower to the White House, from where he has sought to halt publication of various tell-all books. And last month, it was John Bolton who found himself in court when Trump lawyers sued to halt publication of his memoir, The Room Where It Happened, an account of his days as national security advisor to President Trump in 2018 and 2019. We now have initial sales figures for that book. And Andrew, were the doubts you had that the book would sell borne out? How has it performed?
Yeah, you know, it sure has been quite a summer in court, and certainly for Simon & Schuster, which has two of these books that the president is going after. But the Bolton book, yeah, you know, my reservations initially was I really did question whether it was going to be a big seller. Well, it has turned out to be number one on the PW seller list, and the publisher has gone back to press a few times and now has over a million copies in print. And when you add in ebook sales, well, it is a blockbuster by any measure. As turned off as people might have been about the idea that Bolton was exploiting his time in the White House, refusing to testify before an impeachment proceeding, but saving it for a book, it has not been borne out by resentment in the sales figures, that's for sure. It is a big blockbuster, likely a million-selling book, and a million-seller in politics. And we've had a lot of conversations over the last year or so about whether the appetite that fueled the wave of Trump-related bestsellers in 2018 was tapering off. Well, it was tapering off. But now, 4 months or so before the election, I think it's fair to say it's hot again right now, at least for the right books.
Indeed. As you say, Simon & Schuster has another hot Trump book on its list, Mary L. Trump's family memoir, Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man. And Trump family legal attempts to stop its publication have dominated headlines over the last 2 weeks. Today, they are back in court, but the battle may already be over. Tell us where things stand, Andrew.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The parties are back in court today, this time the right court. Maybe I should just back up for our listeners for where we left off. You know, on June 26th, I think it was our last podcast, lawyers for the Trump family had filed the initial case to stop Mary L. Trump's memoir in surrogates court in Queens because the case revolves around a confidentiality clause that was tucked into a 2001 settlement agreement for Fred Trump Sr.'s estate. That's the president's father. Well, within a day, the surrogate court booted the case, saying it had no role in enforcing that kind of clause. And Trump family lawyer Charles B. Harder swiftly refiled the case in New York State Supreme Court. He is again asking for a temporary restraining order blocking both the author and Simon & Schuster from publishing the book.
So, Andrew, you assured me and listeners on our last conversation that there was no chance the court would block Mary Trump's book publication. Well, not quite, it turns out.
Yeah, I'll say it's just been an absolute whirlwind of events. I'll try to encapsulate them all, and you can stop me if I've lost you or it's going too fast, because it is indeed quite a blur here, all these various motions and proceedings. They say the wheels of justice grind slowly, not so much in this case. So, as to restraining the publication, which we spoke about on our last podcast 2 weeks ago, on June 30th, Judge Hal B. Greenwald surprised pretty much everyone, and certainly this prognosticating reporter, by issuing an order to show cause and granting a temporary restraining order, blocking both the author and Simon & Schuster from moving forward with publication until a July 10th hearing in his court, citing the confidentiality clause. And when I saw that, you know, my initial reaction was, I have to say, wow, this poor judge.
Oh, wait, stop there. Well, why this poor judge?
We go no respect at all to the Honorable Hal B. Greenwald, but he's a state judge minding his business up there in Poughkeepsie, New York, in Dutchess County. And I mean, it's state Supreme Court. It's a lot of slip and fall cases and contract disputes and you didn't mow my lawn. And until 2018, when Greenwald was elected to the state Supreme Court on the Democratic ticket, I might add, he was a family court judge. Now he finds himself in court facing down lawyers for the president of the United States and a team of lawyers that is distinguished, to say the least, led by Theodore Boutros, who has argued like, I don't know, 50 cases before the Supreme Court. All these lawyers are now before him, and he's got the national media on top of him now. And it has to be a little bit intimidating, right? Not to mention, you know, he's got Twitter and, you know, the president supporters on Twitter who are going to certainly take aim at him. And what's the first thing that he does? Well, he just issues a temporary restraining order against a book publisher. And, you know, I'm sure he's thinking, hey, it's just 10 days. There's a long holiday weekend in there for July 4th. No big deal. Well, things just exploded from there.
Well, as you say, just another innocent TRO, but things did explode.
Yeah. So within hours of Greenwald's restraining order, two emergency petitions hit the appeals court, one from the author, one from the publisher, Simon & Schuster. And appellate court judge, presiding judge Alan Shankman, heard the case that afternoon. Literally hours after Greenwald issued the temporary restraining order, the parties were in front of an appellate court judge. Now, our listeners will recall that the pub date for Mary Trump's book was initially set for July 28th. So what's the big deal, right? By, you know, July 10th, the order could certainly be lifted. But it is a big deal, both in terms of what it means for the First Amendment and free speech, but also in terms of what it means for prepping for publication. You know, that kind of uncertainty is never appreciated. You know, review copies need to get out. Books need to be shipped to stores ahead of that July 28th pub date. So you throw in a 10-day delay in there, and yeah, it matters. In his affidavit, SNS CEO Jonathan Karp explained why. And basically, he told the court, you snooze, you lose. You know, you can't just stop the printers and then pick right up where you left off because you lose your spot in line. Well, fortunately, the very next day, the appeals court had its opinion and it lifted the restraining order against Simon & Schuster, finding that, well, they're not a party to any confidentiality agreement in question here, but they didn't lift it against Mary Trump, which is a little odd, right? You know, and the long and short of it is that publication is back on for Simon & Schuster, but the author remains enjoined.
Well, it is an odd proposition. What does it mean to enjoin the author, but not the publisher?
So an odd question, absolutely, right? But as we discussed in our last podcast 2 weeks ago, the reason I was sure there wasn't going to be an injunction against Simon & Schuster is because they're not a party to any confidentiality agreement with the Trump family. And that's exactly what the appellate court found. Now, it's still to be determined if Simon & Schuster is acting in concert with the author or is an agent of the author and still can be enjoined. That's what they're talking about in court today. Simon & Schuster says, no way. But in terms of the restraining order, without more facts, there was just no way that the court could stop the publisher from moving ahead with publication. So Simon & Schuster, all clear. They can go ahead, pending a new ruling today, they can go ahead with the publication. But the author, the interesting part, the resulting restraining order is now operating essentially as a gag order on the author, on Mary L. Trump herself. So her book is basically out. But she can do no press interviews. There's no going on The View, you know, there's no going on drive time radio. Mary Trump has since deputized a friend of hers to speak on her behalf. And you may have seen her like giving interviews here and there. And that friend last night said that once the order is lifted, she's confident that Mary Trump is going to be eager to speak to the press. So, you know, even if the book gets out there, there is still something at stake here. And that's, you know, stopping a Trump family member from getting on TV and speaking their mind. But this is more than keeping your spot at the printer for Simon & Schuster. And after the appellate decision, SNS wisely took the obvious next step. They pushed up publication of the book. It's now set to drop on this Tuesday, July 14th, Happy Bastille Day, rather than July 28th. And all the press and the reviews that were in the pipeline that would have come out a week or so before July 28th, well, they're, of course, out right now. Every reporter in the country that works on this stuff, myself included, has a copy of the book. And the revelations from the book are literally everywhere, all over TV. And, you know, to recycle a line from Judge Royce Lambert's decision not to block John Bolton's book in June, the horse is out of the barn.
And it certainly matters that this horse is out of the barn, of course. Explain why, Andrew, and tell me also how the Trump family has responded to Simon & Schuster moving up the schedule for the publication.
So you're absolutely right. It does matter that this horse is out of the barn. And the wide release and reporting on the contents of Mary L. Trump's book actually makes the court granting the Trump family request for an order stopping publication, well, it makes it increasingly unlikely because the information in the book is no longer confidential and courts generally don't issue injunctions, especially injunctions involving speech that are obviously ineffective. As Judge Lambert said in the Bolton case, for obvious reasons, he wasn't going to order a nationwide search and seizure of a political memoir. Now, as for the Trump lawyers, the Trump family lawyers, I should say, let's just say they were not impressed with Simon & Schuster's move. They blasted Simon & Schuster for moving up the pub date, and I'm sure this is going to be a point of contention at the hearing today, as Trump family attorneys also doubled down on their request for an injunction that would restrain both the author and the publisher. In essence, Trump attorneys asked whether a book publisher who, after having paid for the right to publish a book and knowing that there's a dispute about whether the author has the legal right to publish that book, where the author has even been temporarily enjoined, does that publisher really have the right to just rush ahead, to move up its publication to distribute the book? How is that not going, doing an end run around the court? That's the argument that Trump family lawyers are going to put in court today. They're going to ask the court to not let that stand. But the fact is, I don't think that's going to be enough.
So what are the legal arguments here then, and how do you think it will go?
The arguments. Okay. So for the Trump family, the plaintiffs in this case, this is a contract case. You know, I've seen a lot of coverage of the case that explain this as, you know, this primarily a freedom to publish case, which it is in many respects. But the Trump family argues that that's not controlling here. The sense of the Pentagon Papers or a whistleblower or even John Bolton, this is about a confidentiality clause on a 19-year-old private contract that was done in connection with a settlement. Now, without that, we're not here. Period. As Trump family attorney Charles B. Harder writes in his brief, there's no constitutional bar to clear for an injunction enjoining a book that a party has lawfully contracted never to write. There's just no constitutional prior restraint in this case, Harder states. It's a contract dispute, a mere contract dispute, I should quote him, plain and simple. Now, in support of that position, lawyers for the Trump family filed a very entertaining 83-page reply brief on Tuesday, and that is hefty for a reply brief. Usually they're, you know, 30 pages max. And it was filled with some what I'll call very revealing points, very Trumpian points, but not a lot of legal heft. And that's from my non-lawyer perspective. And we'll hear more about that from the lawyers in the coming days. But it certainly seemed to me as an observer that the cases cited in that brief were not exactly on point in terms of speech in the First Amendment. But there are a few statements that I wanted to share with you because they really caught my eye. You know, in probably the most Trumpian moment in the brief, Harder lamented the fact that not restraining this book would essentially make it impossible for future politicians to use sweeping non-disclosure agreements to hide their dirty laundry, to basically hide damaging facts from the public. And I kid you not. You know, I'll quote, Harder writes, and I have it written down here, at bottom, if Mary Trump's position is accepted, it would mean that politicians could not enter into confidential relationships at all, even for the most legitimate of reasons, because the obligation would be terminated whenever elections come around. Well, heaven forfend. I mean, let's not have transparency in our elections and on our candidates here. Another thing that was in the filing that I thought was very interesting was Harder's specific aim at Simon & Schuster's role as a book publisher, arguing, in fact, that despite the publisher's arguments to the contrary, they're not the same as a newspaper. You know, Mary L. Trump should not be treated as being published by a news agency. Newspaper writers don't pay for news, the brief argues. Book publishers do. They pay their authors to create their books, then they edit them, they go back and forth. It's a collaborative process. So the Trump family argues that no court has ever specifically extended what they call, and this is also revealing, the special privileges of news gathering to book publishing. So, oh, there are special privileges, you say, for newspapers? Well, that's what this is. I'm not quite sure that that's the right way to look at all this. So they go on to accuse Simon & Schuster, too, of bad faith. And they end up torturing the hell out of Judge Lambert's horse out of the barn analogy to make the point. They say that Simon & Schuster, as the publisher of the book, knew that the horse had signed an agreement not to let him out. But days before, they snuck out to the stables at midnight and let the horse out anyway. Okay. Enough of that.
Okay. Well, maybe the judge will say nay to that. We'll find out. But how about the author and the publisher? What's their case?
So, well, obviously, this is a prior restraint case, right? And it's a serious First Amendment case. In their July 2nd brief, lawyers from Mariel Trump insisted the case was not a mere contract issue. The Trump family is seeking an injunction that would restrain Ms. Trump from sharing insights that she alone can share on the current president during his reelection. A lot of the financial things as well, things that were ruled on by the Supreme Court this week. Now, it's a big deal, and there may, in fact, be no more serious First Amendment injury in American law, Mariel Trump's attorneys argued. And there are plenty of other arguments, too, including the one that we had already discussed, that an injunction to block this book, to go back and seize it from bookstores, well, that just can't work. In its June 30th brief, Simon & Schuster attorneys called the difference in models between book publishers and newspapers that we just spoke about a distinction without a difference, because we're still talking about protected speech here. Yeah, and the reason no court has extended what Trump lawyers call this special privilege to newspapers onto book publishers is because there is no special privilege. It's a right that all publishers enjoy, regardless of what their business model is. So the publishers argue that they are not working in concert with, they're not an agent of the author. They bought the manuscript from the author and what Simon & Schuster describes as an arm's length agreement between independent parties. And once they accepted that manuscript, that's it. They're in control. They're not in concert with. They're not an agent of Mary Trump. They own the property. Now, is this also a contract issue, as the Trump family lawyers raise? Sure. And in addition to the constitutional arguments, lawyers for Mary Trump argue that the confidentiality agreement at issue is unenforceable and inapplicable here. For one, and a potentially damaging revelation, I think, Mariel Trump says she was fraudulently induced into signing that settlement agreement based on false valuations of the Trump fortune. So if this case keeps on being litigated, that could become a very messy point of contention for Trump lawyers. In addition, the brief argues the confidentiality provision, which was agreed to in the narrow context of this estate settlement, is not nearly specific enough to constitute a valid waiver of First Amendment rights. So it can't be interpreted as this perpetual ban on Trump family members to speak publicly about issues of public concern, especially when one of those family members has now voluntarily made his life somewhat of a public issue by running for and becoming president of the United States.
And this all amounts to terrific publicity for the book. Terrific and free, too.
Oh, it sure is. You know, Simon & Schuster is still on track to publish the book on July 14th, as opposed to July 28th. And in an amended affidavit from Simon & Schuster CEO Jonathan Karp, which came out on Wednesday, as of June 25th, the publisher had 75,000 copies printed and shipped to bookstores. Well, after the attention the case brought to the book, pre-orders surged. The book hit number one on Amazon, and Simon & Schuster reports that it has already gone back to press for a sixth printing, and the total number of copies in print and out there ready to be dropped on Tuesday is over 600,000. So from 75,000 to 600,000. And I would submit to you, there's no publicity agent in the world you could pay to get that kind of jump. So making this all makes it a huge summer season for Simon & Schuster. They had John Bolton, who's going to be over a million now, 600,000 copies of Mary Trump's book. And, two things just leap to mind when I consider just how big of a season this is going to be. And one is that, if you thought Simon & Schuster was a liberal left-wing commie pinko outfit, well, in August, they're going to publish Sean Hannity's new book. So there, that's going to be a big seller too, but from the other side of the aisle, shall we say. And the other thing that comes to mind is, man, how much fun would Carolyn Reedy be having right now? As our listeners may know, the former Simon & Schuster CEO passed away suddenly just weeks ago. And there was a memorial for her online this week. And I'll just say, as hard as this must be for the staff at Simon & Schuster to have lost their CEO, especially during this pandemic, I'm happy for them to be so busy and so successful and so well, so competent. They're handling this so well. They're doing such a good job performing with these hot button books. So I hope it brings a little bit of happiness, a little bit of good feelings to the staff, knowing that Carolyn would surely be very proud of the work they're doing.
Indeed, Andrew. And still more news from SNS this week that they must be celebrating. A new publisher is in the house.
That's right. Simon & Schuster has reached beyond the ranks of traditional publishing to find a successor to Jonathan Karp, who, of course, became the CEO after Carolyn Reedy's death this spring. And it's Dana Kennedy, who has been the administrator of the Pulitzer Prizes since 2018. She was named Senior VP and Publisher of the Simon & Schuster imprint, effective July 27th, and she's going to report directly to Jonathan Karp. Now, prior to joining the Pulitzers, Kennedy covered a broad range of topics, including business and finance and race and class, terrorism. She wrote about politics and law enforcement, and she did it all for the New York Times. And she was a lead writer and an editor on the Times 2001 series, How Race is Lived in America, which won a Pulitzer Prize for National Reporting. So quite a pedigree there. And in addition to her editorial background, Kennedy was part of the Times senior management team. She was involved in areas including hiring and management training and staff development across all of the Times platforms. She also served as a special advisor to the Times CEO and executive editor on strategic planning and change management, diversity and inclusion practices, certainly very, very important issues now for the publishing industry. In a statement, Jonathan Karp said Kennedy's experience will be a welcome addition to Simon & Schuster. It will deepen the house's strengths and expand its fields of vision. And it certainly is a bold and ingenious hire. And I'll close by wishing Simon & Schuster and Dana Kennedy great success going forward.
Unless anyone rushed to judgment and think this is a snap move by Jonathan Karp, I read, Andrew, that he had reached out to her some time ago. In fact, nearly 2 years ago.
That's true. Actually, in fact, they've been in discussions. I know Jonathan Karp has reached out to Dana and have been talking about a possible role for her for some time. It just so happened that this was the time.
This is the time. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me today and every Friday on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on Beyond the Book, in March 2020, the U.S. Supreme Court held that Congress lacked authority to abrogate a state's sovereign immunity from copyright infringement suits. When Congress passed the Copyright Remedy Clarification Act in 1990, it was responding to pressure from filmmakers like Rick Allen, as well as movie studios, software companies, and many other IP stakeholders who said states were abusing sovereign immunity to avoid paying licensing fees. An underwater videographer, Rick Allen, sued the state of North Carolina when he learned it was using his exclusive footage showing the wreckage of Blackbeard the Pirate's flagship vessel without his permission.
So I think what was frustrating for me is that as an intellectual property holder, I followed every statute and law that was required of me. I registered my copyright, I created the work, and I've defended my copyright over the years to my work. And so there's nothing else legally or by statute that I could have done to protect my intellectual property. And yet I'm still left here with no remedy and no way to deal with copyright infringement by the state of North Carolina.
Our state government's copyright pirates, next on Beyond the Book. Our show is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to Beyond the Book wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Our complete show archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.